Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games through a series of weird misadventures and previous engagements. I've not done this for like 4 weeks, but this is my second NXT podcast of the last couple of days because I did do Wrestling Night in America with Greg right after, what was that? Oh, Vengeance Day. You see, you try to push that terrible name out of your head, and apparently it works because I could not remember the name of it. So we're talking NXT for February the 6th, 2024. We are in a Carmelo Hayes is a heel again era, and man, did he remind us that this is where he was meant to be all along. He is so, so good at it. It's, you know, you kind of overlook the fact that he said, that's why I took you out trick, even though he didn't take him out during the match, and the only thing that happened during the match looked accidental. And then you have to think about the fact that his attack was after the match. And, you know, if you think about it too hard, you'll say wrestling is stupid, but I'm off the rails. Carmelo's great, and he, of course, figured in after the main event tonight. We got Ilya Dragunov versus Dijak, chapter 7 or 8, and after that, Dragunov, of course, wins the non-title match at 12:55 with an H-bomb. Good stiff stuff there, and then afterwards, Carmelo Hayes, who has already kind of made his intentions for the championship clear, really lays it out that he's after the championship here. So in the absence of Trick Williams, who I think will be selling for a little bit, I would like for him to sell until Roadblock and not show up and then really, really make the absence make the heart grow fonder, have him come back. Although everybody's very fond already, of course he's white hot, but have him come back in a big way, either cost Melo that, or if Melo is to win, see this Dragunov, this works either way with Dragunov and Hayes, because we get our Trick versus Melo match either way at Stand and Deliver, and it could be for the championship, and it could not. And then Ilya Dragunov will, of course, be facing Kazuchika Okada. I'm Kelly Wells. I already said that. Let's talk main event, and we can't really talk main event without Melo, so talk about Melo's sit-down interview as well. Bruce Lee Hazelwood.
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me at B_Lee253. Melo's sit-down, it was great because one thing I've always said about heels is their justification or their reason for being a heel, it has to make sense to us, or at least has to make sense to us in a sense that we believe what they are saying. And he showed tonight why he's such a good heel, because everything he said, from his perspective, I can totally see why he would make that move and feel like, in a sense, that Trick was turning on him, or bite, as he said tonight, biting the hand that feeds you, right? So he did really well there, laying out all the reasons why he turned on Trick, even going so far as to talk about how he started mimicking his mannerisms in matches. And I just felt like overall, I mean, so he opened the show and then didn't say anything and just left, basically, right? So for him to milk that a bit and come out and then really just hammer it home how much he, I want to say he has disdain for Trick, but more just how he felt betrayed by Trick doing what he did, because Melo felt like he was the one not only that brought him up, but Trick knew that for Melo it's about the title. And I feel like, so when we go to the main event, all right, Melo makes the interference at the end and takes out Dragunov. You ask about it. It could be for the title. It might not be for the title. I think it should be for the title because the turn and the attack happened because Trick was making his way toward a championship match, which Melo feels like is his. So I feel like at Roadblock, we're going to have Melo take the title from Dragunov, and then Trick makes his return, and they have that match at Stand and Deliver. And finally, we have what we've been saying for months and months and months and months and months, which is Trick defeats Melo for the title at Stand and Deliver to end the show. So I think that's what, where they're going. Now, with the match itself, hard-hitting match, great match. You said on Sunday with Greg that it was there's no person in NXT better to match the style of Okada if he is indeed the person they're hyping with these three faces vignettes, that with his strong style, he's no better match for anyone else in NXT. Dijak is also showing that he is probably up there in terms of having that hard-hitting style, but I feel like there are no shortage of bruisers in there in NXT. So if Okada does indeed come to NXT, which I'm not certain is the case, but okay, maybe he is. Someone was telling me earlier today about... Okay, hold on real quick. There's a siren.
Wee-woo.
Tell you, what a place Bruce lives in. He's the only one that gets sirens.
I'm far enough from the main road, I guess. I would be a criminal for you guys. If you guys hear sirens, they're coming for me.
You know how it is over here. There's limited space, so people live pretty close to the streets, and I also live close to two hospitals, so and a police station. That aside, if Okada does indeed come in, having Dragunov without the title going to Stand and Deliver as his opponent, I think makes it more likely that Okada would emerge victorious than if Dragunov did have the title at Stand and Deliver. And I feel like it's something you want to do, like with Nakamura and Sami Zayn at TakeOver Dallas, where he came in and he won, and it was Zayn's send-off. Now, I'm not sure if Dragunov would be sent off, but I feel like there are enough similarities between the two situations here that, I mean, Nakamura left because I don't know if he wanted to prove himself, but he felt like he had done all he needed to do in New Japan and came over. And, I mean, that first match was a great, great match. So I feel like we have something similar brewing here with Okada. If he does come over. Now, I do feel like Okada is someone who doesn't need to go to NXT and should go straight to Raw. But maybe that's because, Kelly, you and me are people who are more in tune with pro wrestling beyond WWE than a lot of the WWE fans.
Easy for us to say. Yeah.
Right. So him going to NXT could be, you know, just like, I mean, it's not what he did with Jade Cargill, but she did have an appearance or two on NXT, not wrestling, but she did appear. And that also helped with the hype for her leading into, I guess she's on SmackDown now. I can't remember. Too much stuff has been going on in terms of signings and people. But I think if he does come to NXT, he's probably got to be fast-tracked, maybe a year in NXT at most, and then he's gone. Which Stand and Deliver to Stand and Deliver sounds like a pretty good timeline for that to happen. So, again, this is all hedging on if he does come to NXT, his match with Dragunov, presumably at a TakeOver or Stand and Deliver. Going back to TakeOver, wow. At Stand and Deliver should be a very, very fun match. Then again, if you're not used to Okada's style, you talked about this a bit too on Sunday. Okada's style isn't necessarily something that is enrapturing unless you're really into storytelling and strong style and those type of things. If you're more into all the, not to say he isn't, but if you're into more of the athletic, high-flying, high, fast-paced matches, that's not necessarily Okada. So I do wonder how much of that style is going to translate over to the fans. And if they do accept him, if he does indeed come to WWE and NXT. Now, in NXT, he'll probably get a better reception because they're more used to that kind of a style. Where on SmackDown, that's more of the question.
Yeah, Okada, on a couple of days ago, I said he doesn't obviously translate to the WWE.
Mm-hmm.
But let me amend that and say he doesn't really translate to U.S. wrestling at all. Like, I don't think he fits all that well in AEW either. Given the kind of fan they have and like what they're looking for from a go-go-go standpoint. He's not an obvious fit anywhere in this country, and yet it does seem he's coming here. So we will see. I'm so nervous for him. I'm really nervous for him, and I love him so much that if it goes sideways, it is going to hurt me deeply. Nate.
Look, real quick. Okay, real quick, I think it is inarguable that Kazuchika Okada is not one of the top five, at worst, 10 wrestlers of the past 50 years. So that's taking it from me. Kelly, you might have a different opinion, but I don't think you can argue it a different way. He has to be in the top five, at worst, top 10 of the last 50 years.
I think that could be true. That's a lot of wrestlers, but God, he's so steady. Like, he's never not in a really strong match unless that match is meant to be comedy, like his occasional matches with Yano. And you posted the gif you posted was actually probably my favorite post match they ever did, where Okada's doing his Rainmaker pose and Yano, who's just taken one in the Nuggets, puts up, he does his Alfred E. Newman pose, you know,
shrug.
Right next to him, the shrug. It's just lovely, them doing it side by side. And they're in the same faction. That makes no sense, those two being in the same faction. But they are. Well, they were, anyway. And now I'm sad. Nate, who are you? And what do you think about Mello and whether or not he can't miss?
I don't think he can miss, but I think you guys missed. Clearly, there's only one person that has three faces. That's Mick Foley. He's coming in NXT, hands down. Anyway, no, it's probably Okada. Mello, I am completely on board with everything going on right now. Even down to the promo tonight, to kick off the show tonight, rather, he comes out. Addresses the crowd by just standing there or sitting in the chair in the center of the ring. Well, the crowd is on fire against him. We're getting FU Mello chants, which they weren't bleeping out on TV at first, and then they did. But the crowd was eating him up, playing along, obviously. I thought it was great that he just gets up and he's like, no, not now, and walks away. Excellent heel move, I think. It was a great way to build some heat. And then, of course, he comes back later on and kind of goes into, you know, his reasoning as to why he, you know, went ahead and turned on Trick. And I'm glad he kind of gave the answer that he gave. At the end of Vengeance Day the other night, he's walking back up the ramp and he's like, you know, yelling at the fans, like, you're to blame and you're to blame. I forget exactly what he was saying, but it was like, you know, kind of like Oprah, you get a car and you get a car. He was kind of just pointing out in the crowd, and you could hear him blaming individual people in the crowd. It's their fault that he turned. And I'm like, that's kind of a cop-out. Like, we've heard that so many times that, you know, you're mad at the fans because the fans, started cheering for your friend or something like that. And clearly that was part of what it was, but it was a very small part of what it was. It really kind of, Mello talked more obviously about, you know, Trick and Trick's ego and things like that. I thought it was very well done. It made sense for the story. I definitely think I'm on board with what Kelly said to start the show. I hope Trick is like out of action, you know, until Roadblock shows up, you know, either at Roadblock to maybe cost Mello the title, assuming they're going back to Ilya and Mello, which I kind of think they may, cost Mello the title, Ilya keeps it, or Trick, winds up coming out after Carmella wins the title or something like that. To set up the two of them at Stand and Deliver for the title, which I would like to see. I would like to see that match for the title. I don't know if it necessarily needs the title at this point. I mean, it's the best story going on in NXT right now. But I feel like with the title, them talking, you know, who's the best champion and the story they're telling. I mean, even down to the promo tonight, Carmelo Hayes said that he was going for the NXT championship and Trick was going for the U.S. title, or the North American championship. And so he's bringing championships up in this whole thing. I'd like to see, I hate to use the cliche, but then finish this story about who's the better champion. And with Carmelo Hayes clearly going to the main roster sooner rather than later, put Trick over, give him a run at the title. I think it'd be I think he'd have a, you know, a pretty decent run. The crowd right now is, I don't know who the crowd is more solidly behind, and are they more behind Trick Williams or Cody Rhodes? Probably Cody, because more people watch the main roster, but the reaction is still there for Trick, and it's not just in the Performance Center, as we saw at Vengeance Day the other day. So, you know, because that crowd obviously can be a little different than others. So, thumbs up here. I'm digging where they're going, and I'm along for the ride.
You can call us 515-605-9345. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Let's go to JB. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Number one, I'll take Byron over Booker as color commentator every day of the week and twice on Tuesday, pun intended. Number two, NXT made a really smart booking move in feuding Dragunov with Trick while Mello lurked in the background the entire time. It was a great way to progress Trick as a bona fide star of a face without having to win the title while simultaneously preventing the crowd from turning on Ilya because everyone was able to direct their ire at Mello, and rightfully so. Three, Kelly talked about it with Greg on Wrestling Night in America after Vengeance Day last Sunday. But who does Dragunov get as stand and a deliver? The only worthy options I can think of are a debuting Okada or someone from their main roster, as both Kelly and Greg suggested. As always, love the show and go VIP! And then additionally, he sent, after seeing the ending to the main event, could we be getting a Trick Mello Dragunov triple threat at Stand and Deliver? That wouldn't be a very satisfying ending to the Trick Mello feud to me. Maybe they have the triple threat then culminate Trick Mello in a singles match at the PLE after Stand and Deliver? I thought about the triple threat a lot, and I'm hoping that they don't do it. I don't think this needs it, and I don't need a triple threat unless there's a really, really, really strong reason to do it. And this has some of that, but I think it's better to have Trick play a role in the end of the Dragunov Hayes match, which I'm guessing right now, ask me next week, but I'm guessing right now will be a singles match at Roadblock, and then we get a singles match Trick and Mello at Stand and Deliver. There is no way that this story ends without those two in a singles match, whether it's for the championship or not. It can't.
It can't. No. Yeah, it can't.
As for the other points, I'll take Byron over Booker, too. Booker is fun. Like, he'd be a fun uncle. But I don't need him to be my color commentator, necessarily. And, you know, I just don't have it in me to get that mad at an announcer, even though I occasionally do at Vic when he mispronounces things. But Vic likes wrestling enough that I kind of forgive it. The smart booking. I really think this three-person main event story has been very strong all the way through. And I guess that's it, because we think we know. What the next thing up for Dragunov is. Nate, anything on this email?
As far as kind of what's going on with Stand and Deliver and Roadblock, I think we kind of just talked about that a little bit, so I'm not going to harp on that too much. But I Byron as a commentator, honestly, I kind of forgot how much I like Byron as a commentator. He just slotted in. I kind of forgot he wasn't necessarily supposed to be there until like halfway through the show. I'm like, oh yeah, I don't hear Booker T. It just seemed natural. I mean, he was part of NXT for a very long time. He's your kind of typical WWE commentator or whatever. But I think he adds to the product rather than takes away. Not much, but I absolutely take him over Booker. I think everything else we've kind of pretty much already touched on, so I'll throw it to Bruce.
When it comes to Byron, so he is a really good pure babyface commentator at times. He can be a bit overbearing, go back, and I mean, Kelly was living through some of that on AYB, but I also wanted to give him credit because he was pretty important in the Kofi Kingston title run, or the run to the title and the title run. So he when he does have those moments. I was hoping that they would keep Wade Barrett on NXT after the appearance on Saturday and with the change to the SmackDown announced team, because I thought Wade did really well in NXT during his time, especially paired with someone like Vic, who I think he needs someone who's a little more in the mold of a traditional color commentator like Wade than someone like Booker T, who's more of an ad-lib person, it feels like. And as you said, Kelly, you know, Moon Over the Moon, so, oh, yeah, it's one of your favorites. So I think that Byron is still an upgrade, but I would prefer that they, and I know that I saw a report today they're not going to do it, but I would prefer that they had Wade Barrett back on NXT. And again, it's no disrespect to Byron. I just think Wade Barrett is a better fit in NXT than Byron Saxton is. I think Byron is great when he's a backstage correspondent and interviewer, but not necessarily as a full-time commentator.
I don't necessarily think he should be a color commentator. I'd like to see Byron more as like your traditional commentator. But I'd also like to see Vic and Corey at some point, because I feel like Vic could play off
Corey,
pretty
off
well.
Screen.
All right, fine, that's cool.
No, I would take that Corey badgering Vic a lot.
Yeah, I feel like that could be a good dynamic.
Yeah. I think we do. Okay, let's talk opener. It was a long one. They went to two commercial breaks. That is very rare for any NXT match, but especially one that is not in the main event slot. This went 16:43. This was all tag team rific. It's just a lot of things surrounding this one. The winners of the Dusty Cup, of course, Bron Breakker and Baron Corbin. And we were lamenting, I think on Wrestling Night in America, that they haven't been showing, or maybe this is just a tweet I saw, I don't know, that they haven't been showing the names on the Dusty Cup. And then they showed it today as they were like panning up to show the two guys standing by the Dusty Cup. And then their celebration gets cut short by the entrance of Axiom and Nathan Fraser, which it made the post-match beating work, but it was also like, why are you going to make Axiom and Nathan Fraser look like a couple of dicks for doing that during the during their celebration of the Dusty Cup? And especially when these guys were in the Dusty Cup and they lost to these guys, it just makes it seem petty on their part. But anyway, Axiom and Nathan Fraser, of course, given that moment, do defeat Blade and Inoue, who are probably the best team that never wins that I've seen in a very, very long time. Well, not a very long time, because Grizzled Young Veterans didn't win very much towards the end of their run, and they were absolutely exquisite. 16:43 golden ratio. Axiom finishes off Idris Inoue. And immediately Corbin and Breakker, who were sitting in on commentary doing their semi-odd couple thing, beat down Axiom and Fraser. And then the family finally shows up to respond and say, hey, let's do this next week. So we got a tag team championship match next week after not having one on the PLE. So there you go. That's your big opening multi-person storyline, Bruce.
Yeah, so aside from Carmelo Hayes taking the first 5 minutes or so, you had a good solid 30 minutes. The next 30 minutes is dedicated to tag team wrestling. And I think that was really good. And the match getting two commercial breaks, I mean, hey, the match had two good tag teams in there and teams that could pace themselves well for that kind of a match. So I think the highlight here was good, and the fact that you had the Wolf Dogs present to provide commentary and do some more of their odd couple interactions, not just in their little promo beforehand, but also on commentary, I think, did add a bit of – I think in the in-ring segment they were going a little too forced, but the commentary side of it I felt was much more natural with the two. And the match itself was good. you know, I just feel like eventually they need to have, you know, if he turn on Blade or something, because as Joseph said on commentary, they've been attacking for years and there's just really been nothing, right? So I feel like either that has to happen or they need to go to Ronsack and just become a fodder team up there. It's just not working right now with them as much as I like the two. But then again, I guess this whole thing with Brindley Rhys, maybe that's going to lead to some kind of a push for them if they do continue that association. Vic did mention it on commentary briefly today too. So you had those matches, you had the attack, or had that match, and you had the attack afterward, which, I mean, if you go off what you were saying, Kelly, how they interrupted them in the beginning, it was probably warranted. And the fans were actually cheering the attack. They didn't boo the Wolf Dogs for attacking Frazer and Axiom. So,
yeah, I mean, they've been making these guys essentially likable odd couple guys for the last few weeks. So, of course they did. Like, what did they think they were going to get?
Not, I mean, especially after they were interrupted, you're right. So I do think, just real quick on a stage of interruptions, I do like how later in the night Ava told Ridge Holland, first, don't interrupt me. I was like, oh, good for you, Ava. Back to this. It's interesting that the family, I feel like they had a tag team title match a couple weeks ago, and now they're having one next week. This is probably the quickest turnaround they've had in tag team title defense since they won them back in the summer. We're talking about how it felt like they had a match every 2 months, 3 months maybe for the title, and it was just a lot of segments between them, a lot of videos, a lot of vignettes, a lot of backstage segments. So it's good to see the tag team titles get back into more of a prominent place on the show, especially because right now the main event picture on the men's side seems so locked in place through the next month and a half to two that you really can't make any more space except for someone like an Okada coming in, right? So placing some more of the emphasis on the tag team division leading into the next 6 to 8 weeks is a good choice, because then you have things to anchor the show when you not necessarily want to put too much out there for the whole Mello trick, Ilya Dragunov thing, and people get a little bored with it, right? So, to me, I like the fact that we're having this. I do hope that we do see a title change, because the family just hasn't done much with the tag team championship. And as much as it pains me to say this, I'm actually intrigued at what this title reign would look like with the Wolf Dogs. So, yeah, all in all, I like that we had a lot of emphasis on the tag team division tonight.
Yeah, Baron, really are one of the better things on the show right now. It's so weird.
Which is so weird to say.
Yeah, Nate, take it away.
It is. It's so weird to say. I mean, you know, Bron Breakker, I mean, go back in the archives and listen to what I've said. I've not historically been a fan, you know, from his debut in NXT 2.0 as you know, the white meat babyface son of Rick Steiner, all the way to even, you know, after his heel turn, you know, his heel turn at first was okay, and then it kind of just, you know, stalled out. But now, with this pairing with Baron Corbin, they have some great chemistry. They play off of each other very, very well. They're funny, and their timing, like, they actually have some comedic timing together. You know, it doesn't seem forced or anything like that. So it is. It's cool to see. It's really cool to see. As far as them winning the titles, I don't know. I'd like to see it. I would like to see it. But with Bron Breakker kind of getting fast tracked to main roster right now, I don't know. We've obviously seen main roster talent hold NXT titles, like, very recently, Dominic Mysterio, Becky Lynch, Dolph Ziggler, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not out of the realm of possibility for sure that, you know, Bron Breakker could pull double duty for a little bit. But I almost think that if he gets called to the main roster, they're going to want to put him, or not gets called. I mean, I think he's in the middle of being called up to the main roster. They're going to want to put him in a prominent single spot, not necessarily as a, well, he's half of a tag team, because I at least for me, if somebody says he's half a tag team, like, I don't know if I would take him quite as seriously as if, you know, comes up and it's like, he's, you know, former two-time NXT champion and, you know, kind of omitting, and, you know, say he's a Dusty Cup winner, but omit the fact that he's still part of an active tag team. And I think that would probably come off a little bit better. But yeah, you know, looking forward to seeing what they do with Bron Breakker on the main roster. So if he kind of continues this comedic type character or not, my guess is probably not. They're going to change it up a little bit, but we'll see. We'll see what happens and see how he performs with it. As far as the match itself goes, it's a fun match between Axiom, Nathan Frazier, Blade and Inoue. Bruce, you said something about Blade and Inoue breaking up and splitting up and kind of going their separate ways, and like I'm so torn on that because they're such a great tag team together, like in technically and all of that, obviously, but like you said, they're not getting over. They're not necessarily advancing in major storylines unless this thing with Brinley Reese is going somewhere. But at the same time, like, I think we could, to see Inoue maybe turn heel on the nerd Blade or vice versa, that could also make for, maybe kind of like a Trick Mello light type story, which, maybe that could certainly be interesting. It's intriguing. I kind of like the idea. Axiom and Nathan Frazier coming out to interrupt Baron Corbin and Breakker. I thought that was weird too. And in my headcanon, I'm just writing it off as they needed to, the sound guy was just moving the show along. There's that. There's one other thing that I wanted to say. I forget what it was, but I've already yammered on for long enough. So there we go.
All right, let's talk calendars. The calendar thing has been a smashing success, apparently, and we got a scene between two of our calendar girls, Thea Hale and JC Jane. JC wants Thea to play a little harder to get. She's trying to teach her how to be in relationships and how to be in toxic relationships is really what she wants out of Thea. But she wants her to play a little harder to get because Thea is very, very eager and does not know how to play it cool around Riley Osborne, which is really a perfect way to use Thea Hale. So we have the match with Riley Osborne and Lexus King, and Thea's not there. Riley starts looking for her. This, of course, gives Lexus King the opening to win with the coronation, 4 minutes and 6 seconds. Perfectly acceptable wrestling. Later on, Osborne runs into the women backstage, and he's wondering why Thea wasn't there. He's bummed he lost, but he's even more crestfallen by the idea that he may not have a Valentine anymore. And he asks if Thea is still his Valentine, and she goes, yes, 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 after she's trying to play it cool, but simply cannot. And he turns around and does a little fist bump. And JC Jane, of course, is so annoyed by all of this, and she's convinced she can teach Thea Hale how to play it cool. This is all really weird stuff to be talking about on a wrestling show, even for a wrestling fan. Like, on paper, this is very stupid, but this is the best. I mean, Thea Hale's made for storylines like this. Riley Osborne's blandly charming in this. He's not the main guy in this story, so it's fine. And JC is just by far doing the best work of her wrestling career with all these little moments and scenes that she's having with Thea. So I cannot believe how much I'm actually digging this story, but I am, guys. Nate.
I hear you, man. Like, I never thought I was going to get into Chase University as much as I have. Go in the archives. Listen to what I thought. I kind of like this story so far. I mean, Thea Hale, like you said, she's a great character. Like, I'm going to say actor, but I'm using that term loosely. She's incredibly energetic, charismatic. She can wrestle. She's still somewhat green, but I mean, I think she's come a hell of a long way, over the last year or so. Her and JC Jane and that kind of, almost big sister, little sister, or, you know, kind of friend down the wrong path, but not really. I think they've got some great chemistry. JC's, like you said, clearly doing some of the best work that she's done right now. I mean, light years better than anything she did with Toxic Attraction or against Gigi Dolan. So, you know, like I said, you know, I think we all said this actually at one point. You know, there's really nothing against Gigi Dolan. There's really nothing against JC Jane. They just did not seem to have great chemistry together. You know, Gigi, I think, is surprised. And it's funny because we all kind of thought Gigi was going to be the one that took off and had a bit of a better career than JC. And it's
so did they.
Yeah, you know, and it's just so the opposite right now. You know, and good for JC. Good for JC. And, you know, hopefully things turn around for Gigi. But we're not talking about her right now. You know, I thought this is a good match between you know, King and Osborne. You know, like you said, perfectly good wrestling, advanced the story. Made sense for Lex King to get the win on, you know, from a few different fronts, from the storyline perspective for, you know, Chase University, but also get some more heat on Lexus King. You know, his debut, I mean, it's been fine. I wouldn't say it's, you know, taken anybody by storm. I think we could all agree on that. But, you know, I mean, I think overall it's been fine. So I think, you know, kind of trying to get some more heat on him and try to, get him more into the position that I think they want him to be in. Yeah, certainly makes sense as well. So yeah, there we go.
Go ahead, Bruce.
I guess for the whole Thea Hale, Riley Osborne, JC Jane thing in the back, only thing I'll add is that I guess that segment really got over the importance of winning matches in WWE. The match itself was fine. I do think King, I'm still not really buying his offense too much. He's just a bit too slow in the ring for me. But I did like the added snap of the coronation from the top rope and having that extra impact and showing a little bit of smarts by pulling Osborne away from the ropes and hooking the far leg so he couldn't put the leg on the rope. But, yeah, I don't really have much else to add because I think – you know, regarding the calendar, I said all my stuff about that last week. There's really not much here aside from, to me, the fact that Osborne was more concerned about his Valentine's Day than he was actually about winning and moving up in the division.
Yeah, that always strikes me, but I, too, was that age, and women were definitely more important to me than my professional life. In fact,
well,
I'm 46,
mm-hmm.
And that's still true.
Well, look. What I'm saying
35,
is
35, not so much. But whatever.
What I'm saying is, if you get that progression, you have more winning and earnings to then have to spend on your women friends, which usually helps, right? So, like a Valentine's Day might not be so cheap. If you had a winner's purse. Might be a little more feasible, right? I'm just saying.
I think that's actually a good storyline for JC Jane, for her to be like, you have to win for our dating fund to grow. That actually could be kind of funny. What are the odds that JC Jane goes dark by stealing Riley Osborne from Thea Hale at the end of this? Oh, why do I hate love so much that I would even ask that question?
Has she even seemed interested in Riley yet?
She hasn't, but I'm just...
But she's doing exactly what she's telling Thea Hale to do and playing hard to get.
Yeah.
I did like her adding the whole, like, I know a little thing about being toxic. And I was like, oh, a little nod to the fans, right, who remember. So, and like you said, she's doing much better. I feel like her reactions and her... how she speaks in her promos now is much more natural than they were when she was in Toxic Attraction.
Roxanne Perez versus Lola Vice. This one went 9:38. This sprung out of the triple threat, the singles match that became a triple threat at, you know, that show that they did that definitely has a name.
Vengeance Day.
Yep, indeed. I knew it was that. That's how I talk, Nate. That's how normal people talk.
Yes. Oh, no. My bad.
Roxanne Perez versus Lola Vice. Roxy wins this one in 9:38 with Pop Rocks. Another match that had a break in it. All of them did. Almost all of them did. Four breaks during matches today. Wow, two during the same match. But anyway, Pop Rocks, Tatum came in. Tatum Paxley, I think her character is shifting to just R-Truth. she showed up and she tried to cash in when she has no contract and there is no champion in this match, which is funny enough, but it made me think like they're trying to get R-Truth out of a different performer. So, and very weird to see her in this position. I guess that's an excuse to give Lola Vice her next feud. But we'll have to see how this fits in, if it does at all, with Lyra Valkyria, or if they are slightly pivoting away from Tatum and Lyra, which I hope they are not, because they've gotten some really good, weird stuff out of that. And it seems like, and no matter how good you think it is, it deserves to have an ending to that storyline. But yeah, it would seem that Lola Vice, seething and staring out at Tatum Paxley, will have an issue with her. Roxanne wins here and still, you know, doesn't really turn heel. Almost to the point where I'm like, did they plan it and then table it? I just don't know.
Von Wagner hit.
Yeah. I mean, Von Wagner, we'll get to him.
if we have to.
If we must. Time permitting, we will talk about Von Wagner. So, Roxy with Pop Rocks, and that's it. There's no post-match angle here, which I really would have thought, given all the stuff that's been going on with Roxy. But she was mad. She didn't win the championship. Now she was like, cool, I beat this person. So I guess we'll have to see what's next for her. Bruce?
Yeah, it was a good match. I think Vice is getting better as we see her. To your point about commercial matches being in the during commercial breaks being during the matches, I said a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, that while as a live recap person, not having commercials in matches does kind of suck, especially if it's like a Nathan Fraser versus an Axiom. Watching it, I'd rather be able to not have the story of the match be broken up by things I don't care about for a couple minutes. And I know they use the commercial breaks to do wrestles and everything like that, but I'd still rather them go back to having commercial breaks during the entrances and just have the match, go through with it, and then go to the commercial break after, because I just hate the feeling of being taken out of the match. Now, when I'm doing the report, it's nice to have a little break, but as someone who enjoys pro wrestling, I'm not a fan of having those commercial breaks having to be during the match. For me, it is interesting that there was no follow-up whatsoever, even throughout the rest of the show, with either Perez or Vice, because of how much they put into hyping this match tonight. They showed the beatdown two or three times, the scrap two or three times from after their match at Vengeance, or after it became a triple threat at Vengeance Day, two or three times leading up to the match tonight. And then you had nothing after, which I feel like you'd want to hear from Perez especially, because there's no clear person to challenge Valkyria, and it would seem that Perez winning here gives her another shot, considering that her one-on-one match, again, wasn't a one-on-one match. She still hasn't had a one-on-one rematch, considering what happened on Sunday, right? So not being able to hear from her and being able to reiterate that to fans, I think, was a miscue here. For Vice, I wonder what the plan is now, because so much of her character was built around having that contract. And now that she doesn't have the contract and she just lost another high-profile match, what is the plan with her? I wouldn't mind if they took her off TV until Roadblock or something, and maybe she attacks whoever is the winner of the Women's Championship match or something, or they even hold her off longer. I'm just not sure right now what the plan forward is for her, because I don't really see a clear path, because Electra Lopez is basically gone now on SmackDown, and and her other feud she just lost basically to Brock Van Press. So, again, I don't see a clear path for her right now. Maybe taking her off TV is the best idea.
Nate, Roxy, and Lola.
Yeah, I'll just go ahead and add, because I don't really have a whole lot to add other than this, but I want to see how they wind up booking Lola Vice going forward here. She was the NXT breakout winner. She had that contract, which she, I feel like, foolishly cashed in, and it became a triple threat. Kevin and I talked about that on the VIP roundtable. Why would you – and we – this goes for Money in the Bank too, and this, you know, we've seen this happen too. You know, people just cash in the middle of a match, turning it into a triple threat. Why would you do that? Wait for the champion to be down, you know, right after the match, and then come out. Like, that makes the most sense. But whatever, But she ended up losing, and she was the one that took the pin at Vengeance Day. She wound up losing tonight to Roxy. I still think that they've got, you know, a good plan for Lola Vice and things like that, but I'm curious to see where, you know, kind of how she, I don't say comes back from this, because I don't think it's really taken much away from her. I'm sure I might be the only person really thinking about it. But at least did stick out to me, you know, that she was the NXT breakout, you know, winner, and, you know, now she's lost her next two matches, you know, back to back. I think, you know, I'm kind of hoping that they kind of use that as a bit of a story to maybe, you know, light a fire under a little bit. But yeah, other than that, I pretty much agree with everything else you guys said. So we can move on.
Our one other match was Fallon Henley and Ren Sinclair versus Lash Legend and Jakara Jackson. We did get a metaphor talk segment before this. No Quarter Catch Club showed up, and they got their issues with the Heritage Cup champion also. So we've got something there. In addition to Noam Dar and Oro Mensah having something coming with, oh yes, Von Wagner and Mr. Stone, and two children, apparently. That scene, I guess, is going to be part of this because it is related to this, but it's a one-time only Mr. Stone getting into the ring, even though he's done that a few times already. Getting in there to team with Von Wagner against the Metaphor Boys, but after this other segment, we get Henley and Sinclair versus Legend and Jackson. And Jackson, for being gone from the ring as long as she was, she sure came back in there looking fairly smooth. And they did their tag moves. They did the Benjamin and Haas tag team move, which was really cool for me to see, because I absolutely adored the World's Greatest Tag Team. Still do. Mm-hmm. Oh man. They were a gut punch to the whole SmackDown. SmackDown was already so good. And then those guys showed up.
Oh, yeah. My God. Okay.
They're running in Angle's corner.
Short, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I know.
Too short. Yep. So there we go. Legend pins Sinclair after, I think it was the body slam.
That sounds right.
Yeah. So good big versus small stuff whenever Legend is in there. Sinclair is just going to make, she's going to make so much money potentially. Being that babyface underdog, she looks the part, she wrestles the part, she knows how to look like it hurts, and the Jakara Jackson being the tug of war, that was fun too.
That was good,
a fun spot, and Jakara's better than I thought she'd be at this point, and Lash Legend is better than I ever thought she'd be at any point, given her first like five matches when she showed up were like, we really wondered whether she'd be allowed to stay there. But they stuck with her, and because she's got a kind of nasty charisma, like a fun, nasty charisma that is usable. So they tried to find a way with her, and now she's finding a way in the ring too. So yeah, I just really like this team of Legend and Jackson. I can't say enough about how much I like them. And I really like Henley and Sinclair too. So lots to like here in a shortish 5 minute and 1 second match. There you go. That is your tag match. Just in case the sirens are still around, let me throw first tonight.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good going on in the women's division right now in NXT, which is awesome. I mean, when I first started doing this podcast, you know, the women's division back in 2019 was off the charts. We've kind of seen some ebbs and flows since, but I feel like we're on a good path right now. We're in a really good spot in the women's division. And all four of these women are certainly, you know, part of what I'm talking about here. Fallon Henley, you know, I feel like she is really starting to break away from the rest of the pack. But even not, I say starting to, she has been for a little while. And with Tiffany Stratton, you know, reportedly no longer being on NXT TV whatsoever from you know, reports I've seen earlier in the week, and fully up on the main roster now. I feel like Fallon Henley's kind of a good person to almost fill that type of a role. Obviously, you know, heel versus face, a little bit different, but, in terms of star power, Fallon Henley might be somebody that kind of, fill that spot. She's great in the ring. She's certainly been one of the better better people on the mic and in backstage promos in the women's division. So really, really glad to see that out of her and see that development out of her over the last last couple of years. And Ren Sinclair, she's now brand new to the roster. I really like what we see out of her so far. I like this pairing between the two. Even though Fallon Henley's still relatively new to the business, kind of, the newbie and the veteran type of a vibe in a way. I definitely dig it. And as you said, Lash Legend, Jakar Jackson have been, I think they've been absolutely killing it, as has Metaphor in general, just as a whole. I couldn't tell who was worse at the time, Nikita Lyons or Lash Legend. And, there were a lot of comparisons between the two for a lot of different reasons.
I could tell.
No, you couldn't. None of us could.
Absolutely not.
You're bullshitting. Absolutely not.
Go back and look. I could tell it was worse.
I will, because I'm pretty sure we've had this conversation and we were all on board with, we're like, not sure who was worse.
We definitely thought they were both bad, but I knew which one was worse, I promise you.
Yeah. Well, I think we definitely came to that conclusion after, a handful of weeks, but I think there was a little bit point in time where we were all like, I don't know. But regardless, really, really glad to see, Lash kind of fall into this character and kind of become Lash Legend. I mean, not that she wasn't before with lashing out and all of that, but like she didn't find her footing with the character, but she absolutely has now. And she has the chops in the ring to back it up, which is great. And Jakar Jackson, I mean, I don't have anything bad to say. She's still finding her spots and all of that. I feel like she's almost I don't say a lackey to Lash Legend, but she's definitely takes a bit of a backseat to Lash Legend, but I'm okay with that. And I think it's a good spot for her to be in right now. And one day I think she'll probably have a little bit more, more of a role within the group. So, like I said, nothing bad really to say about this match. I think the women's division's in a great spot. And, I think this is, kind of a match you can point at to prove it.
And it's fun to be able to say that the women's division is in a great spot, because
yes,
when NXT Street Art first showed up, it was not a good place. It was like a clean break, and they had, like, Dakota Kai was staying back and having the best matches that like eight different women ever had in their life, because she's so good. But, oh my God, like when those women were facing each other, I mean, B-Fab versus Electra Lopez, man, that is a thing that happened.
I try to forget that happened.
Bruce.
Yeah, so I don't think I'm as high on Sinclair just because at the end of the match, she was her face when she was crying was just so over the top to me, and I'm like, you're crying because you lost the match. Get your
face. I didn't actually see that.
Yeah, actually, I didn't notice that myself.
Yeah.
Ah, well, go back and check that because, again, she got to get used to that, and if she's going to cry after every match, it's going to be a little too much. So, that aside, what I really appreciate is just, again, the development, the improvement we've seen from Lash Legend. It's like you were saying, Kelly, I was most interested in watching Takara Jackson tonight because we haven't really seen her in the ring too much. I think she had been injured, but they had been keeping her on TV with the group, and that's why we hadn't seen her in matches. But I do think she was in the Battle Royal a couple weeks ago, if I remember correctly.
She was, but she went right away, and the
yeah.
bump was extremely minimal.
Yeah, so maybe at that time she was just trying to get back to the feel of things, and now she feels comfortable enough that, you know, obviously because she was taking bumps throughout the whole match and doing well. And, you know, Lash Legend, again, just great improvement. Fallon Henley is someone I'm going to keep singing the praises of because since the breakout tournament she was in, I've been saying her and Kiana James, watch out, they're going to be something. I just feel like she moves with much more purpose in the ring than we've seen from her, and I feel like the confidence just really comes through both in and out of the ring with her, and I'm looking forward to how the rest of her career develops because I feel like she could be someone who, even if she's not winning titles, is going to be someone who probably is going to be at worst, you know, a pure mid-carder for most of her career and at best going to touch that main event here and there. So I feel like she's on a good path, and, you know, we can tie this in with Briggs and Jensen later, but the fact that they're separated now, I think, has, at least for two of them, has given them just so much space to become, to come into themselves, and I really like and appreciate that. And with Metaphor, I think it's about time for Noam Dar to lose the Heritage Cup and to move on to something else. Maybe the North American title, maybe the men's championship. I just feel like, yes, that Heritage Cup has been associated with him pretty much since they brought it back to NXT. But I do want to see him and Metaphor be in some more serious... Okay. I like their comedy aspects, but I do feel like there's potential with this group to be much more dominant than they are if they have them go a more serious route. Not saying they can't do some of the comedy, but I just feel like it's too one-sided right now.
I kind of like that aspect. You know, I really like Noam Dar with the Heritage Cup just because, like, the idea that he's so in love with it that he's despondent without it. Like, I kind of love that, but the thing that I feel like we're missing out on is rounds matches that don't have Noam Dar in them.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to – like, he's great in that – in those confines, but so are a lot of guys. So that'd be fun to see. Okay, segments. They also happened. Izzy Dame and Kiana James – They're big Chris Jericho fans, so they peed in Brinley Reese's coffee. They didn't pee in it. They just poured it out. you know, Kiana James, for a long time, was stuck in the worst segments week after week that NXT was producing. And then she got kind of pushed, and she got into better segments, and she got surrounded with better personnel. And everything was looking really good. And now she's in there with Izzy Dame. And now she's in the worst segments that are on the show. And I feel like it's hurting her to be associated with these sort of dopey scenes. And Izzy's, you know, she's fine.
It's very high school.
Yeah. It seems like in a short amount of time, Kiana James has gone from threatening to sort of tap the door of the main roster to struggling for TV time. And I don't want to say a job, that's a lot, but struggling to find TV time on NXT. Yeah. It's not great. But Brinley Reese is fun, and she is the kind of pure baby face that that these brats should be feuding with. So that's a plus. Kalani Jordan, her video was what set off Brinley about being so excited in the first place. It was basically Kalani Jordan saying, hey, I'm not booked this week, but I exist. And here's some proof. And, you know, I say that, it sounds negative, but, you know, it was fine. It was perfectly good babyface fire. We got the Three Faces video. We talked about that a little bit. Oba Femi, we had a pre-taped segment for him. He's terrifying. That was the point of that. And Briggs and Jensen had a scene. These guys have been involved in some of the worst things that have been produced on NXT. Also, it's not Josh Briggs' fault. And that's all I'll say about these two guys and those scenes. But this was pretty all right. I didn't realize that I kind of and tiny bit, I'm even doing the motion, missed Brooks Jensen. And the flavor that he gave to that particular grouping. He had an awkward small talk scene and then admitted he's completely lost without Josh Briggs. And Josh Briggs threw him against the lockers, told him to grow some balls. I don't know where this is taking us, but I'm actually pretty intrigued by it, which
I love that segment.
I didn't expect to say about the next time that I saw Brooks Jensen, but that's how I feel. We also got Ava Raine talking first to Jada Parker, who is so cool, by the way. I'm sorry, I'm going to be a spaz for her, but Jada Parker is awesome. I love her already. And then she talked to Ridge Holland, gave them the matches they want, kind of. Jada Parker got her match with Adrianna Rizzo. Ridge Holland got a match with Gallus, but he has to beat them one by one by one and do that. I went pretty hard at Ava on Wrestling Night in America.
Yes, you did.
I did. It was real specific, and it was a little mean, but
I mean,
back.
Not as mean as Greg's wife.
Yes, it wasn't. Mine just had the specificity of, yeah, I gave it a lot of setup, and then, I said what I said. But anyway, then she comes out here today, and she had, by a comfortable margin, the best segment she has had in any capacity on this show. She had poise. She looked like she was authority to some degree. Like, her look is not doing her any favors, and most of that is literally just her youth. Nothing she can do about that. But you know, they've been putting her out there in stupid gear for and I didn't notice what she was wearing this time, which is probably a plus because she has looked so much unlike an authority figure. But yeah, her timing was okay. Her delivery was okay. And she seemed like, she didn't seem like over rehearsed. She seemed like she was really giving these reactions in real time. It's weird to be kind of eating my words after just 48 hours, but this was such a massive step in the right direction for Ava. So as the guy who's on the front lines of being mean to Ava, I should be the first one to call out that this was a massive, massive improvement. So on the segments that we're doing here as cleanup before I get to our last email, Bruce.
Yeah, so on the Ava thing, I alluded to this earlier when I said I really just liked that she told Ridge straight up, first, don't cut me off. Just, you talked about having more authority. I felt like there was more confidence in her presentation tonight, in her delivery, and how she delivered those lines. You know, telling a wrestler who did cut you off to not cut you off, especially, as you said, being as young as she is, being in the position that she is, I think that was a good spot for her. And as you said, she had a really good, I think, a good night, because right before, with the whole Jada Parker thing, and, you know, yeah, Jada Parker since the beginning. We knew when she was when she came out for that breakout tournament. Both, I think all three of us were just like, yeah, I don't care if she lost, she loses, she's gonna be something. And as soon as she joined OTM, it just felt she just feels natural in her presentation, natural in how she speaks to Ava. And that, you know, after Parker left, Ava goes, "Ooh, that," so oh, that went well. You know, just kind of like, "Ooh," kind of understanding or coming into her home, trying to
That was a really nice human moment. Yeah.
Yes, because I think she was trying to test herself and push herself, and all of us have had those moments at work or in our life, right? So I really think Ava came across well here. Not like a five-star performance, but from where she was at to this week. I mean, just in 1 week, if you look at last Tuesday, I'm not sure if she appeared on Sunday because I was at work, but just her appearance from last Tuesday to now, big improvement, and I think that's well. To look, we all knew Nepotism Hire, just like Cody Rhodes talked about in his promo with CM Punk a couple weeks ago. But I think some of that faith they've been showing in her is starting to show those rewards, and hopefully moving forward, she just keeps improving in her role, because not just her association with her father, but trying to be her own woman, her own self, apart from her father, I think, and people still knowing who that association is, but understanding that she's not her father, I think it's a good path for her moving forward to establish herself as her own individual within professional wrestling. You know, Obafemi, man is scary, man is cool, keep the title on him. I tweeted over the weekend, if he doesn't have a picture as Ultimo Dragon with all the belts by the end of the year, then NXT is doing something wrong here. What was the last segment that I was? Oh, Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen. So I really liked Josh Briggs in this segment tonight. That little smile you had when Brooks Jensen said he's lost without him and Fallon Henley. And just kind of like, is this guy being serious right now? I like that. And, you know, Vic Joseph called it tough love. He just pushed him in his locker and yelled at him and said, there's a whole performance center of people waiting to take your spot. You have two things you can do, either sit there and cry like you're doing right now or grow some balls. I mean, you could have just said grow up. But I like this, and I'm not sure where this is going, but obviously with giving Brooks Jensen this kind of time and this kind of investment, they're going to go somewhere with it. I don't think it's going to be some kind of turn on Briggs, just because, again, going back to what Nate was saying earlier, we have that with Hayes and with Williams and potentially, you know, Finn Blade. So there's enough of that going on. But I like the path that they're using with Briggs and Henley, and kind of while they're on their separate paths, they're kind of in a they're almost mirroring each other, finding their own ways and becoming their own people, and Brooks having to find that path. I think Josh Briggs is going to have a pretty big year this year in 2024 based off of being in the Iron Survivor Challenge at the end of the year, 2023, the association with JBL picking him, and then a couple weeks ago giving him that pep talk. I keep saying that I feel like JBL eventually is going to be his manager or mouthpiece or something, just because the style similarities, the association they already have, Briggs incorporating the follow-away slam and the clothesline from Hell as his finisher. So I like what we saw, especially from Briggs tonight, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's holding singles gold by the summer.
Nate, on the segments.
It wouldn't surprise me either, Bruce. You know, one of the things I want to say, yeah, it was on the VIP roundtable. You know, we were talking about potentially who would be the next person for Ilya. And Josh Briggs, one of the first people that came to my mind. You know, and in a way it was kind of surprising, but at the same time it made a lot of sense. It was, as we've said, you know, before, former Evolve champion, you know, so no stranger to a singles, you know, singles run or anything like that. And after seeing him tonight in this segment, I really stand by what I said. Obviously, I don't think he's going to be next in line for Ilya, you know, after what we saw tonight, but I really, like, I agree with you. I think he'll be holding singles gold, whether it be the North American title or the NXT title, hopefully by the end of the year. If not, I think it would be, at least from what I saw tonight, I think it'd be a shame. You know, we know he can go in the ring. We know, you know, he's clearly got some acting ability in him with, you know, just how intense he was tonight. I mean, after he walked away from Jensen, yeah, after throwing Jensen into the locker and then, you know, screaming at him, walking away, I verbally said, damn, like, yeah, like I was Ron Simmons or something. Like, I was not really expecting that out of Briggs. I knew he had it in him, but like, I wasn't expecting it in that moment. It was definitely like a tough love thing. I don't think it was like a heel turn or anything at the moment yet. It could have been, but I'm really curious to see how this winds up playing out with Jensen. Because I had a feeling this was what was going to be, you know, happening with Jensen, you know, kind of floundering and whatever. And obviously they're playing into that. And, we'll see. Maybe he comes back next week and, you know, he's got, you know, a fire lit under his ass. So, you know, we'll see. But I really, really like the intensity out of Josh Briggs here. Other than that, not much I really wanted to mention other than, yes, Obafemi should hold every title, including the women's tag team championships.
Now, I'm not giving up on Tyler Rust still becoming the champion of every title. But if it doesn't happen for him, Obafemi could be the guy. The doctor is in. This comes from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well because I covered the PLE with Nate, and I'm sure you will talk through those storyline implications this evening. I have three equally important questions. Number one, when do we have to send out the milk cartons for Dante Chen? Number two, when are you giving your reviews of the Chase U calendar that you all bought on Sunday night? And number three, can we bring back No Way Jose? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Guys, I think the main thing I took away from this is Catani has cracked. He is completely cracked. There's no coming back from here. Send out those milk cartons for Dante Chen. At the same time, you send them out for Boa. I did not buy the calendar. When I was in my 20s, I would have not bought the calendar, but I would have done everything I could to see what the content of said calendar was. I'm not that guy anymore. And can we bring back No Way Jose? I'm going to say probably not. So there you go. That is our show. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Nate, who are you?
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, January was the bet. No, I'm kidding. I hadn't bought the calendar myself. Had to go there. NateLindberg.com. You can check out all the things I do. What were you saying?
Did you?
No, I didn't. I went to the site to see if you could actually buy it because, like, they were touting it. You know, they're talking about it, like, on TV. So I didn't know if there was going to, like, just kind of a story where they talk about selling them, or we're actually going to sell them. So I went to the site to actually, like, see if you could buy it. And I mentioned it was $24.99 to Kevin on VIP Roundtable. But I did not go ahead and purchase it, I swear. But anyway, NateLindberg.com.
I tried so hard to give you guys an excuse not to talk about the calendar. But here we are talking about
Ellie lies, Nate.
Nate. Your tag. Yes.
There was a time where, you know, I would have bought the calendar, not gonna lie. But you know, I was gonna say I don't know. I'm not married anymore, so it's not like anybody can get mad at me, but yeah, whatever. I'm still not gonna buy it. NateLindberg.com, check out all the things I do. I was on the post show last night with Wade. We talked all about Cody Rhodes and The Rock for a very long time. We actually did not talk about anything else but Cody Rhodes and The Rock until, about the last minute when I brought up Io and Bailey. I think that's all I'm doing right now. So there we go.
Well done. The picture of class. Bruce, take it away.
That's me.
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me at B_Lee253. I'll do the report for next Tuesday. And before we sign off, just want to say, go Niners.
All right, folks. We will see you in 7. And we will see how well the Go Niners ages. Because, yeah, we're about to find out. Cheers, folks. Next week.